If you were a middle school student or just even a teenager in the last 20 years, your sex ed class may have had a little help from one of these little creatures. That's a Reality Works brand baby crying, a robot tryout baby, a stroke of genius from a former NASA engineer who perhaps came up with crash test dummies as well, but he decided that less realistic sack of flour babies weren't a good substitute for the real thing to teach young people. So he developed a baby doll with a cry, you heard it there, to be turned off by a teenage caregiver to give students an idea of how difficult, how much work it is to be a parent and therefore possibly prevent teen pregnancy. But a study recently published in The Lancet showed the opposite. Study followed thousands of teenage girls in Western Australia, and it turned out the girls who took care of the robot baby were more likely to get pregnant before they turned 20. The study's author said the difference was small, but Nicole Cushman is the executive director of ANSWER, a program at Rutgers University that advocates comprehensive sex education. In the U.S., where standards for what constitutes sex education vary widely, she was not surprised by the news that robo-babies may not be as effective elsewhere at reducing teen pregnancy.
In reality, most young people who do experience a pregnancy, it's unintended. What we know about the research on comprehensive sex education is that when we address the full range of options available to young people, we talk to them about abstinence, we talk to them about how to figure out when is the right time for them to become sexually active, but we also talk to them about a full range of contraceptive methods and condoms, we are able to help young people delay the first time they have sex. And there has not been any persuasive evidence to date that using simulators is effective. So this latest study to come out of Australia is just the latest in a series of such evaluations that have all concluded, while you might get some changes in terms of young people's attitudes towards pregnancy and childbearing, no actual behavioral changes.
Did the numbers actually in some cases show the opposite effect that it encourages?
From this latest study, it certainly appears so. I haven't seen that in prior research, so I don't know if that will be borne out and if we could say consistently that it has a detrimental effect.
Although as a parent on some level, you would think, duh, you know, babies are adorable. They're a lot of work, but something about being around babies does bond you with the idea of being a parent.
That's absolutely true. And there have been prior approaches that involved bringing young parents into classrooms to talk about their experience with parenting and with a heavy emphasis on the hardships. But some of those programs have also shown detrimental effects, because if these young parents bring their children into the classroom with them, inevitably you have people kind of oohing and aahing over these adorable babies, and it can have an opposite effect. At the same time, we also don't want to stigmatize young parents, many of whom are doing a tremendous job with raising their families in very difficult circumstances often.
So in a situation where an individual who is predisposed to becoming a parent, a mother, as a teenager, if they acquire the information from a comprehensive sex education program that makes them a better parent, a healthier spouse, you would not consider that necessarily a failure if the individual becomes pregnant and yet they go on to have a successful family.
Ultimately, what I would consider a success in any sex education program is that young people are equipped with the knowledge and the skills that they need to make the decisions that are going to be best for them and their futures. So that may include pregnancy. We do know that getting pregnant and having a child at a young age can be a tough road for a lot of young people. But we also can't ignore the other drivers of teen pregnancy, many of which are related to poverty and income inequality and really complex circumstances that many young people grow up in. So sex education is one piece of the puzzle, but it's not the key to delaying parenthood.
You remind me of a book that came out in the 90s that was based on a series of reports from a Washington Post reporter by the name of Leon Dash, who now is a professor. What his work showed, what his reporting showed, was that women became mothers because the economic circumstances offered that as the only means for them to have what appeared to them to be a meaningful option in life. And what Dash also discovered was that that was the case regardless of whether they were black or white, which was at the time when everyone assumed that teen pregnancy was something that had to do with African Americans.
Right, right. It's important to note that the teen pregnancy rate today is at an all-time low. And we have seen declines among all racial and ethnic groups, and including steeper declines among African-American girls, but they still remain disproportionately impacted. And a lot of that is inextricably linked with poverty. And you're absolutely right. That same research holds true today. Until young people have viable options for economic opportunities, for educational opportunities, they don't necessarily have the motivation to delay parenthood. They also won't necessarily wind up in worse circumstances for having become parents. So when we look at research done with siblings, for example, that grew up in very similar or identical circumstances, but one becomes pregnant and one does not, their economic outcomes and their educational outcomes are quite similar. So I think it forces us to rethink these goals around teen pregnancy prevention and really put them in a broader context of what's going on in young people's lives.
That's a really fascinating statistic. What do you think is the reason for the decline in teen pregnancy? And that's something that we should celebrate, but that doesn't necessarily mean that sex education, which can be a real hodgepodge of the kinds of things that people learn about, depending on where you are in the country, is the reason for all of that.
You're absolutely right. So this is, again, a multifaceted, complex issue. Sex education has likely played some role. Better access to contraception, though, is probably the biggest driver. So when we look at young people's rates of sexual activity and we look at their rates of use of condoms and contraception, we see that it's really in terms of contraceptive use and condom use that we've made the greatest stride. So young people are very capable of making responsible decisions in terms of using condoms and contraception when they're equipped with the information and they have access to those services. It's, again, a really complex story. So that's only one piece of the puzzle.
Nicole Cushman is executive director of ANSWER, a program at Rutgers University that advocates comprehensive sex ed. It helps schools implement these kinds of programs. Nicole, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
I'm Zach from Minneapolis, Minnesota. Kids are sexualized so early these days that I think talking to them about respect and love, not in the romantic sense, but in terms of the love of the other, needs to be added to curriculum. Kids will always have sex with each other. It's natural. How they engage in the new, exciting art of love is something that we adults can help develop in our culture.
Kathy from Salem, Oregon. I went to Catholic school where sex ed meant that the girls were taken to the library and shown glass jars of babies who were aborted. I learned never to use birth control, but yet I still had sex and always knew that if I got pregnant, I would still have an abortion. I knew minimal about my reproductive self until I was pregnant at the age 32.
Now, that is mind-blowing. Zach's experience there in Minnesota, I wonder how many kids Zach has. And Kathy in Salem, Oregon, couldn't be more different. Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE or comment at thetakeaway.org. Thanks so much for listening. I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.